On Friday, October 18th, the Norris Group proudly presents its 6th annual award-winning black tie event, I Survived Real Estate. An incredible lineup of industry experts joins Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. Proceeds for the event benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. This event would not be possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: Property Radar and Sean O'Toole, Housing Wire, the Apartment Owners Association, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, and President Bill Tan. Investors Workshops and Sean Watkins, Angel Bronze East, and Sarah Benora. Invest Club for Women and Iris Veneration and Bobby Alexander. San Jose Real Estate Investors Association and Geraldine Barry. MVT Productions. Wilson Investment Properties. Rhoda Construction. And White House Catering. For event information and tickets, visit isurvivedrealestate.com.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is John Burns. John Burns is the CEO of John Burns Real Estate Consulting. John and his team consult with executives all over the country, analyzing and summarizing the information they need to make housing industry decisions with more confidence. The company is on retainer with many of the largest companies in housing and investment industries, producing regularly monthly reports on housing market conditions and customizing specific studies to help with strategic and community-specific decisions. John's also a frequent speaker and has been interviewed by most of the major media. John, welcome back.
Oh, my pleasure, Bruce.
You know, you and I sort of hooked up in 2005, and I was really just curious how your client base has changed from 05 to 2013.
Oh, it's changed several times along the way. Actually, it's starting to come back to the same old, same old. It's back to home builders again. But in the meantime, we spent a lot of time with the distressed investor crowd and the bank workout crowd and the single-family rental guys who were still working for them. That wasn't even a term that I was familiar with in 2005, so it's interesting how things change.
What's interesting about that is each piece of the industry that you were forced to touch, basically, probably expanded how much you knew.
Oh, absolutely. That's what I love most about my job, is talking to people who touch this industry in many different ways and seeing what they're seeing and then trying to pull it all together for everybody. And you're definitely one of those people, so I'm looking forward to this.
Staff growth, as far as from where you were 05 and 2013, have you expanded?
Yeah, we're at about 42 people now, and we were probably half that size in 05, maybe even less than half that size. I don't remember.
Which is, honestly, that's a pretty major accomplishment for the industry that you had were specifically in, to really have gone on vacation for a long time, to have grown that business and actually come out stronger. That's a pretty good story right there.
Well, thanks. I think it's not as impressive as that. I just, we're in demand when a lot of people need help figuring out the business and there's money to be made. And obviously there was money to be made during the downturn and the upturn. Our business does not do well when housing is boring, and it's been a while since that's happened.
Yeah, boring has not been part of the landscape, that's for sure.
Right.
Now, your staff, I read most of the stuff that comes out. Do they have assignments, or do they get a chance to free roam and make discoveries and say, hey, look at this?
Yeah, two-thirds of my business is our consulting business, which is specific project-oriented. So they're out in the field kicking tires, and we've got an office in Atlanta now and one in Chicago and a couple people in Florida and Dallas. So we've been expanding. So I got better color from what's going on the ground. And then a third of my business is our subscription research business, which most of those folks are located here, but they're pulling together all the information and anecdotes.
I get a big kick every time I figure out just one chart a year that I didn't have before, where I go, okay, that's meaningful. That's something I didn't know would matter, and it matters. And it's all part of a puzzle where you're trying to put it together and say, okay, what'll help me predict something more accurately than I'm currently doing it?
Oh, yeah, you're totally right. And I'm sure we're doing one of those new charts every month, or at least every other week. Right now we're doing a lot of research on what's called the foreign buyer, and trying to really understand what's been driving them and have they pulled back, and if so, why?
Well, it's interesting, the only information I've ever really been able to look at is cars. But the thought would be, okay, well, everything was on sale in, say, 2008 through 2010, and now it's more expensive, so there's going to be a pullback. And then if you look at the history of the foreign buyer, it's anything but that. They usually participate more at the end of the cycles than they do in the beginning. And I think it's an interesting thing, but their human nature kicks in just like a lot of local investors, or speculators probably would be the right word, is that their participation generally gets more aggressive in an 05 than it does in a 2000. So it'll be interesting to see what you come up with.
Yeah, this time around, I would agree with you. This time around, it's been different, though. We've seen just a tremendous surge in foreign buyers in the last 2 years. And I've gotten some color that here in California they've pulled out in the last couple months, particularly some of the Chinese buyers.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks from all the work we're doing in Florida that they're now in Florida.
Okay.
So I think they're a little more – this group is different than the somewhat wealthy individual. I think these are more professional investors who are saying, given where the exchange rate is and given how much U.S. housing is beat up and given what's going on in my local market, I would like to own some real estate in the U.S. as part of my long-term investment strategy.
It'll be interesting to see if their place is taken by the more speculative person.
That is my bet.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to pick your brain on, actually. I've had several phone calls and one this morning from hard money lenders that are trying to raise more money and want us to do some market overview for their offering, and I'm telling them generally no, which means debt's becoming more available, and I'm seeing more ads on TV for come to my seminar to flip this house for $30,000 in profit, and those are warning signs to me.
Warning signs that things are heating up or that real estate is getting back to, I don't know what you mean by that.
But what I mean by that is that people believe real estate is where you make a quick buck.
Right, okay.
And that you'll find flippers selling to flippers who will sell to flippers who at the end of the day someone gets left holding the bag.
It does change the participation type and
right.
Also the sophistication of the participant.
Yes.
And so that's where you're right. The music ends and there can be someone holding the bag. Now, if you're holding it in 91, it's not as painful as it was in 07.
Actually think, flipping homes is a reasonable thing to consider doing right now.
Yeah, we shouldn't go to jail for it or anything.
No, and you're doing it because you've been buying below replacement cost or you see that it's more beat up than usual. The question is whether when the affordability indices erode and some of the other things that you and I both track start to flash warning signals, that's when you get out.
Yeah, as far as what I look at, we're nowhere close to that day.
No, we're
at
not.
At least in
right.
California in general. You could go up to San Francisco and you can cherry pick areas where you go, wow, that's almost like it is over 2006 or 7 numbers.
Yeah.
So what's interesting about that, though, to me, is that proves, yep, people are exactly who they always are.
Yeah, no. U.S. person, people in the U.S. want to make a quick buck.
So and I just spoke in that area. I just spent the weekend in Northern California and spoke in front of a group in San Jose. And the same group that probably got burned in 2007 because prices did recede and then realized maybe 2006 price was actually maybe a little bit on the ridiculous side, is now past that number and feels it's completely justifiable.
Yeah.
And earnings haven't changed very much. So, you just go, okay, well, why would that be a different outcome than just because it hasn't happened yet? You're making it a reasonable thing when maybe it's not.
Right.
Anyway. Real estate prices certainly have taken off. How's that affected the building industry, both nationally and in California?
First of all, all the public home builders have completely made it through the cycle, and they've gone to the debt markets and raised a lot of money at very low interest rates, and that money doesn't have to be repaid for many years from now. So it's allowed them to get very aggressive,
mm-hmm.
and pick your number on your area, how much home prices are up in the last year. You can multiply that by 2 to 3 and say that's how much land prices are up. So
okay.
Home prices are up 15, land prices are up 45. And the biggest impact has been that anybody who had land to sell is making a fortune. And not so much in Southern California, but in other markets, we've seen land at peak pricing, believe it or not.
Okay.
which is creating a challenge for the home builder who needs land. He's really, what I like to say is that we may be in the second or third inning of the recovery, but the price of your land that you have to pay is in the seventh or eighth inning.
Wow.
That's a tough business decision to make.
Well, it is, because usually you don't get to profitably build on that until the late innings, or am I wrong?
Right. No, you're right.
Okay.
And so right now the profit margins on these land deals are so narrow that I would say it's almost zero if no home price appreciation occurs. But people are putting appreciation into the pro forma to make it make sense.
Okay, well, that kind of makes sense, because we were thinking of being a builder. And we built a home sort of as a spec, but really almost to put the pieces of the puzzle together to get everything that we would need to be a builder. And then we looked at the numbers and we looked at the competition, who are obviously better at it than we are, and just went, okay, we're not going to be the best in the world at this. We're going to leave it to them. But you do wonder, some of the prices per square foot, how they do eke out a profit.
Well, you can look at the financials that the publics are reporting, and the profits are pretty minuscule.
Okay. Well, that would make perfect sense. Now, so is that to say that when we're seeing some increase in building, are they predominantly building on lots they've owned previously or lots they are creating from scratch?
It's mostly lots in good locations is a better way of summarizing it. So I'd say it's some of both. The preference is to buy a ready-to-build-on lot in a good location. The second preference would be, well, I'll have to develop the lots and then build on it in a good location. The demand to go out to the outlying areas is not nearly as strong, even though you can build a really good case that it's much less risky to go to a C or D market right now than an A or B market. The builders really just want to stick to the A's and B's because they know that's where people want to live. And if we have a downturn, I may lose money, but at least I know I can sell the house.
Okay. Is that a philosophy change?
You know, I think it's a temporary philosophy change.
Okay.
I think it's a reaction to the downturn.
Right, okay.
That, you know, they'll be buying in those C and D locations soon enough.
Which is, okay, well then maybe that's the answer to a really kind of a, I was confused. I look at the subdivision creation in Riverside and San Bernardino,
right. And
it's down still 95%.
Right.
So is that somebody just saying it's not worth taking a risk, or you know, that's where you would have to put in the extra subdivisions. You can't put in tons of them in Orange County.
No, and that's right. And I think they'll pay a premium to be in the Dairylands or Corona or one of those areas. But you can't give away the land in Hemet right now. So that's the dynamic.
Okay. As far as unsold new homes as a percentage of inventory, has it ever been lower?
Well, it was lower a couple months ago. We've seen inventory levels creep up in the last 3 to 4 months.
Okay.
But still very low by historical standards.
Okay. Is that, as the market changed in, I know the market's probably changed in the last 3 or 4 months, has it changed enough for you are concerned that this is going to be a direction change, not just a little bit of a glitch?
How I would summarize it is my very bullish tone has gotten a lot more conservative.
Okay.
But I still have a positive outlook on the market. It's just that I would say 3 years worth of price recovery we got done in 1 year.
Absolutely.
And really surprised me.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's really the math. It is. If you took a look at normal recoveries, like, 97 was the first year we had anything positive at all. Mm-hmm. You could go to 2000 probably and use up the amount we had in 1 year. You're right. This has been unusual. Now, you know, I always am bombarding my own information with questions. Okay. So when you have 2.5 months of inventory, you know, you start asking questions. Have you ever had prices not accelerate?
Right.
And when you do have a large acceleration of inventory, you know, the spikes when we go from 4 months to 12 months, is that usually due to inventory increase or a lack of sales? And it's almost always a lack of sales. And so you
right.
come back and go, okay. So I'm going to ask you this question. What is the makeup of our demand And if that makeup is geared toward a hedge fund or an investor, is there a pile of occupant buyers ready to take their place?
It varies by market, but we have an all-time high level of investment activity right now as a percentage of sales, higher than in 2005. But that includes the Wall Streets, the local guys, the foreign buyers, the second-home buyers, all of them.
Okay.
What is missing is we have a much lower than usual percentage of first-time buyers.
Correct.
Which is really surprising given that so many people are still trapped in their house underwater. You would think that the first-time buyer would be at an abnormally large percentage, and instead we have the opposite.
Is it possible that they've wanted in, but they literally have been up against 100 cash offers while they're trying to get an FHA loan?
Yeah, so I think the most qualified people have gotten in one way or another, and my view of it and the color that I'm getting is that the entry-level buyer is just not as qualified from a FICO standpoint as they were even 6 months ago. And that story about being outbid by cash buyers in the recent market is very true, and that has helped the home builders because you can always buy a new home. You're just going to have to wait for them to finish it. So a lot of those folks were driven to the new home market. I'm not sure if I answered your question
Well, you mentioned that they were less qualified than they were a few months ago. Now, is that because they've had credit damage, or the lenders have tightened up stuff even more?
No, it's a more credit damaged consumer. The way I'm summarizing it is that the most qualified people who are waiting out the downturn have gotten in.
Okay, so who was left has just got some credit issues now.
Right.
Okay, but the criteria for getting a loan certainly has changed. I mean, FHA, who used to do, they even had a category for, I just, again, looked at the chart, they had a category for under 500 to 430
right.
as a percentage of their loans, and now I think 9% of their mortgages are going to people under 630. So that world has changed to look like almost a Fannie Mae loan.
Yes, and that's been voluntary on the bank's part because they have common sense. They know that somebody with a spotty track record is more likely to go into foreclosure than somebody with a pristine track record. And they know even if FHA is insuring it or Fannie and Freddie are buying it, that if that loan goes into default, it's going to get put back on them.
So the overlays are really a big issue.
You know, if I said they were a big issue, it would sound to me like I was saying that the banks were stupid.
Well,
I would not be lending a 95% loan to somebody who has a track record of not paying their bills, and I don't think you would either, Bruce.
Well, you know, it's interesting. If I were in their position because of what it would do to other things, I would say I would. Especially if I can look at it and say, okay, if you do that, the demand increases to where you're going to have a price movement to where that 5% equity margin changes very quickly to a 15 to a 25. So that would be where I would have some flexibility on when it would be okay and when it wouldn't be okay. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, but there's an interest rate associated with this too.
Sure.
So, I mean, at 4.5%, I'm not making that loan. That guy gets laid off or 2 weeks later he can't pay his mortgage.
Why don't we just make it a subject to, like assumable without qualifying to some investor? They'd take it.
Yeah, but they'd want a higher interest rate, I think.
Well, I mean, see, that honestly, that's what's fun about this panel is that we'll be able to discuss some of these things because I think we have the numbers to where we should have pent-up demand.
Yeah.
From occupants, but we've got policies that won't be able to lend them the money safely, and so are we going to stay at California where are we at 430,000 sales when we probably could be going to 600,000 sales?
Yeah, I think there's an element of this recovery too that I'm starting to pay more attention to. And I look at the job growth, and even the job growth by sector, you can see that there's a fair amount of it in professional business services and financial activities, which are the higher-paying jobs. But you drill down, and the majority of those jobs, more than 50%, are temp jobs. And they're not the type of jobs that give people confidence that they can go get a 30-year mortgage.
Okay.
And I think that's one of the, you know, I'm conjecturing here, and I'm trying to figure out where in the world is this entry-level borrower. I think you throw that in on top of their student loan debt and their credit card loans and auto loans, and they're not even showing up in the sales office. They're just saying, you know, we're not going to take on a 30-year mortgage right now, which is disappointing to me, because I think they already have missed the buying opportunity of their generation, and I think it's going to get worse.
Right. It's interesting when you could come up with a major magazine with a cover in about 2010 saying something about challenging the idea of owning a home. Is it, you know, is it a good decision, basically? And I just remember looking at that cover going, and the statement was, is it economically feasible? And I thought, wow, I mean, getting to fix a payment at 3.5% interest and the price that's currently available, if that's not economically feasible, I really don't know what is.
Yeah.
As far as FHA, there's a couple policies they just changed. One of them, I don't think they've given us numbers, but there's a new policy that now after 1 year, only 1 year wait, you can get a loan after a BK foreclosure or a short sale. So do you think that'll be a big deal? But then I heard of an announcement on radio that they were talking about lowering the FHA loan limit. Now that one I really would, that I think would be damaging.
Yeah, so I do think both is going on. So at first I thought that the one-year change would get a lot of these boomerang buyers, which is the term for people that went through foreclosure and, you know, they're homeowners, they've got two kids and a dog, they want to own again. I thought it'd bring them back into the market.
Yep.
What I've learned is that 1 year is really not enough to clean up your credit, and their credit is pretty trashed after 1 year.
Okay.
So it was not going to be as big of a – it's harder to get a loan.
Okay.
Just because of your credit. Then this lower limit will be a bigger deal. And it is going to be a particularly bigger deal in California. And I think it's going to mostly impact, again, the marginal credit person. So FHA, if you're a 670 FICO, which is, you know, bottom third of the country, but you can get a loan that's FHA insured all day long. If it now has to be Fannie and Freddie, or God forbid, a jumbo mortgage, because Fannie and Freddie's limits are supposedly coming down as well. In 670 FICO, you may not get a loan.
Well, what are the limits coming down to? We've only got a minute left.
You know, we're speculating. I was talking to, actually, the Wall Street Journal reporter who's getting ready to cover it, and he didn't even know.
Right. I mean, I have a pretty good idea of the history of it. If they go back to the former formula,
right,
it's only, about half of Fannie's numbers.
Yeah, like 417 was the number I remember.
Well, that's Fannie. That was Fannie Mae number.
Right, and then 360 or something was FHA.
In Riverside, like let's say when we had a 350 median price, I remember going back to see what the FHA loan was for Riverside at that point, and Riverside's FHA loan was 500, and before it was 170 or something, so it was way less.
Right.
Than the median price.
It spiked quite a bit.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we're out of time. We're going to have a good time on the panel, and we're really excited to have you on that in October 18th. So, John, thanks so much for joining us.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate, Adrenaline Athletics, California Property Solvers, Coldwell Banker Town & Country, Claudia Buys Houses, Elite Auctions, Phoebe, For Investors, By Investors, In a Day Development, Inland Empire Investors Forum, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Investor Experts Inc., Keystone CPA, Las Brisas Escrow, Lavis Associates, Mike Cantu, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Northern San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Orange County Real Estate Investors Association, Orange County Investment Club Phoebe, Personal Real Estate Magazine, Pilot Limo, Primary Residential Mortgage, Realty 411 Magazine, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Southwest Riverside County Association of Realtors, Sunoco Corporation, Spinnaker Loans, UDirect IRA, Tony Alvarez, Westin South Coast Plaza, C CICSurvivedRealEstate.com for more on the event and all of our sponsors.